All right, welcome everybody to the House Education Policy Committee. I'll call it to order. My name is Representative Cheryl Joaquim, and we're going to go through a few procedures real quick. Just remember to mute and unmute your microphone if you're not speaking. We'll have staff unmute for roll call and mute you again, but you can also stay muted just so that we can keep the background noise to a minimum. And then we'll do the same thing we have been doing, is the recognition through the chair, either with a hands up feature or sending an email to Alyssa Fritz or Megan Ariola, or if you called in, *9. The committee packets were posted on our House website and given to members. And comments from the public, if you wish to submit them, you can send them to edpolicy@house.mn. That's edpolicy@house.mn. So our CLA will now unmute all the microphones so that we can take an oral roll call of all the members.
Chair Joaquim.
Present.
Representative Kanesh Padin.
Present.
Representative Erickson.
Present.
Representative Barr.
Present.
Representative Baker.
Check.
Representative Bennett.
Present.
Representative Bierman.
Present.
Representative Christensen.
Present.
Representative Grunhagen.
Present.
Representative Hassan.
Present.
Representative Herr.
Present.
Representative Jordan.
Present.
Representative Mariani. Representative Moeller.
Present.
Representative Sandel.
Present.
Representative Scott. Representative Erdahl.
Present.
Representative Wasilewicz.
Present.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, members. We have a quorum present. So now our next item of business is the minutes for Tuesday, April 28th, 2020. A copy of the minutes from your virtual packet. And staff, please unmute the microphones. Representative Christensen, will you move to adopt the minutes from April 28th?
So moved.
Representative Christensen has moved to adopt the minutes from April 28th. Are there any questions or additions on the minutes? Just got something in the chat feature. Okay, seeing no questions on the minutes, I have staff unmute the microphones. We're going to do this as a voice vote. All those in favor of the minutes for Tuesday, April 28th, 2020, say aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. The minutes have been approved. All right. So the next thing on our agenda is the bill we're hearing today. It's House File 3849 of Representative Sandstead. And Representative Sandstead, welcome to the committee. In order to bring the bill before the committee, Representative Wasilewicz, will you move House File 3849 to be re-referred to the Education Finance Division?
Yep, I will make that motion.
Representative Wasilewicz makes the motion to move House File 3849 to be re-referred to the Education Finance Division. Representative Sansi, I believe you have an amendment coded A2.
I do.
Would you like to briefly explain your amendment, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A2 amendment decreases the concurrent enrollment aid funding by $625,000 for the next 3 years. After that time period, it reinstates it to its original funding of, I believe, $4 million a year. The purpose for the decrease is to use that additional money then to help with the 18 online program, which I will explain in the bill.
Thank you, Representative Sandstead. Members, are there any questions on the A2 amendment? Seeing none, staff unmute the microphones. We'll take a voice vote on the A2 amendment. All those in favor say aye.
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 All those opposed? The amendment the A2 amendment has been adopted. Representative Sancy, would you like to proceed and go through your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 3849 clarifies the statewide concurrent enrollment teacher training program and increases funding for this program. Thank you for adopting the A1 amendment. It has put the bill in the order that I would like. Minnesota's post-secondary enrollment options, PSEO programs, include a number of models, including concurrent enrollment, which often goes by the name of college in the schools. Instructors in these programs are most often high school teachers, specially trained by the sponsoring college or university. A few years ago, I believe it was 2016, the Higher Learning Commission enacted a requirement that these concurrent enrollment teachers must have at least 18 master's degree credits in their field for teaching. Many concurrent enrollment teachers, while having their master's degree already, do not have these additional 18 credits in the specific areas that they teach. In 2016, the legislature first appropriated funds for the Northeast Regional Partnership to provide these credits to high school teachers. This program is now referred to as the 18 online program, referring to the 18 credits and the fact that most of the coursework, is done online. In 2017, the legislature added to the funding and expanded the program statewide. My bill, as amended, increases program funding by $625,000 and is revenue neutral by decreasing concurrent enrollment aid by the same amount. This legislation will ensure that all Minnesota students can take the path that's best for them in high school and will ensure teachers are qualified to deliver lessons at a level required of them. This is not what I would say would be an ideal way of finding funding, but given the fact that we are in a very unique time with COVID, I do believe that this is probably the compromise between higher education, high school, and ultimately, while it does decrease funding somewhat for districts, by keeping their students in school for concurrent enrollment classes rather than having students leave the school to attend college courses off campus, it's probably better for the districts financially. And that's the bill.
Thank you, Representative Anstead. I understand that you have two testifiers here today too as well.
I do.
I have Jeremy Kovash and Kim Lewis. Mr. Kovash, you want to go first, state your name for the record and proceed. Oh, and the organization you're with, I'm sorry.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee. I'm Jeremy Kovash, Executive Director of Lakes Country Service Cooperative, which is a Minnesota educational service agency headquartered in Fergus Falls. Thank you for hearing House File 3849 today. This is a vital program for Minnesota schools to continue offering concurrent enrollment courses for our students across the state. As Representative Sandsteed indicated, the 2016 legislature responded to the Higher Learning Commission's credentialing challenge by creating a pilot program in Northwest Minnesota to help teachers attain graduate credits in their content areas for the concurrent enrollment courses they were teaching. The $3 million grant helped us begin the process of creating graduate courses and admitting high school teachers into Minnesota State University Moorhead, MSUM, for master's level coursework. MSUM stepped up as a partner, offering graduate credits for our enrollees at a discounted tuition rate, which they remain committed to now and into the future. The 2017 legislature redefined the program and made it a statewide initiative. We have also worked with other higher education partners to deliver graduate courses in additional subject areas. As for the HLC challenge, we are making progress. Back in 2016, we estimated that concurrent enrollment instructors were short approximately 15,000 graduate credits. Your support for 18 Online has closed that gap by nearly 9,000 of those credits for teachers in more than 250 school districts across the state of Minnesota. The original $3 million grant will be completely spent as the fall 2020 cohort of teachers finish their coursework. We will run out of money this year. Moving forward, we do have a base budget of $375,000 a year, but this will only run 18 online at one third of its capacity. Moving forward, it's imperative we continue running 18 online at full capacity. We have teachers who have started attaining their content graduate credits, and we don't want them to fall off track. And we don't want to shut down many of the subject areas that we are offering. With the appropriation for 18 online you're considering today with House File 3849 as amended, we can deliver 55 courses per year, which adds up to about 3,000 graduate credits earned on an annual basis. I would like to pause here, Madam Chair, and have my colleague, Ms. Lewis with the Minnesota School Board Association, add her testimony, and I will stand for questions.
Thank you, Mr. Kovash, and thank you to your program for stepping up. College in the Schools is a really great program that is very inclusive for students that may not be able to travel outside school for PSEO, so greatly appreciate it. Ms. Lewis, can you please state your name for the record and proceed?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon. And good afternoon to committee members. My name is Kim Lewis, and I am with the Minnesota School Boards Association. Today, I'm also speaking on behalf of several educational organizations, including the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, Minnesota Rural Education Association, Schools for Equity in Education, Minnesota Association of School Administrators, and Minnesota Association of Secondary School Principals. Mr. Kovash, he provided an excellent explanation of the success the 18 online program has had to date. The current uncertainty of the state budget and what it's facing and the fact that credentialing our teachers is a necessity for our students to continue to take these great courses is what brings us here today. And I want to convey our support for the amendment that makes this a cost-neutral proposal to the state budget. We appreciate your willingness to repurpose a portion of the concurrent enrollment aid to 18 online. To share just a couple of quick data points, a study by the Graduate Program Consortium for Concurrent Enrollment Instructors mapped the landscape concurrent enrollment planning has from the perspectives of high school administrators and instructors, as well as the Minnesota State Concurrent Enrollment Directors. They found that 79% of school administrators report that their instructors still need some graduate credits to maintain or become eligible to teach concurrent enrollment. 99% of administrators report that concurrent enrollment is a priority for their district. Targeting the resources necessary to run 18 online at full capacity will help schools continue their concurrent enrollment partnerships with higher education institutions. These partnerships truly close opportunity gaps for students by helping potential newcomers to higher education find their way into college coursework and therefore open a whole new world of opportunity. We want to thank you for your consideration and support of House File 3849, and I'm happy to stand for any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lewis. We do have some member questions. First, I have Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to both testifiers. This is a creative way to fund this program. You may not know, many of you, that this was begun by former Representative Jennifer Loon in 2016 when we had some one-time money that we could set aside, and we decided that it would be very good to begin this program. My question for you, Mr. Kovash, is do we still receive that discount now that it is statewide? And would you comment on that? And then whether or not teachers are 100% subsidized through this tuition program, or if they also pay some of their own.
Mr. Kovash.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. Madam Chair, I'll take those in two questions, as I think there were two. So number one, yes. Minnesota State University Moorhead continues to charge the program $225 per college credit, which is about 60 to 70% reduction in their graduate credit tuition rate. The statewide piece of that, which is currently $375,000 annually, they negotiate rates with other partners. Part of this bill is kind of bringing this under one umbrella, so that will probably help us with some bargaining power there. But all of the original $3 million, Representative Erickson, That has, those credits have been granted at $225 per credit through MSUM. The other college campuses have charged varying rates. So there's my part A answer. Part B is, are they subsidized? So again, all of the courses at Minnesota State University Moorhead have been free of charge to anyone who has been able to participate in those courses. In addition, we have paid books and we have paid stipends for teachers that are maximized on their salary schedule. This bill moving forward would eliminate the books. We think in working with the School Board Association, the Superintendents Association, the Principals Association, we think that school staff development funds can pick up the cost of books, therefore maximizing our amount of credits moving forward. But to this date, everyone at MSUM, Minnesota State University Moorhead, has taken these programs 100% free of charge. The $375,000 that the statewide piece or part of the statewide piece with Metro, they subsidized $325 per credit. So if a student was taking a class at Mankato State, let's say MSUM, the other MSUM, they would have subsidized that dollar amount, $325. So perhaps the student or the school district had to pick up the cost of, let's just say, $150 per credit. So I know that's a confusing answer, and I apologize. But
No, Mr. Kovash.
Can follow up?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Kovash, that was very good information, because I know that this program is new to many who are serving on this committee, so that was excellent background. Madam Chair, that's the only questions I have.
Thank you, Representative Erickson. I have Representative Rudolph.
Getting advanced degrees in what they teach. And so I'm supportive of this program. But I'm just a question. I don't know who has the answer. But how many teachers participate in this program in Minnesota?
Mr. Kovash.
Representative Verlo, yes, there is a, in the bill, there is a annual report to the legislature by January 15th. So I have shared that broadly. But fantastic question. Some of our concurrent enrollment instructors needed perhaps 2 to 3 to 5 or 6 credits to get there to attain their 18, as Representative Sandsteed indicated. Some of our enrollees need 18 credits, but the average amount of participants per term, we have 3 terms, so there is a fall, winter, and a summer term, is about 250 teachers on average per term at this time.
Is there an average amount of money that they would be receiving through this?
Mr. Kovach.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, so the average amount of money, if you just break that down by the cost of tuition at Minnesota State University Moorhead, which is just short of $500 per credit, so they would be receiving roughly $1,500 per semester to take a course.
Mr. Representative Erla, do you have another follow-up?
No, I think that's good. Thank you.
Thank you. Members, are there any other questions? Representative Kunesh-Podin.
Thank you. Can teachers start taking these courses now, or is this just to complete those that are already in progress? Are they accepting new teachers into the program? And then is there a possibility that there will be more programs added to more coursework to broaden the specter of college classes that kids are taking in high school?
Mr. Kovash.
Thank you, Representative, Madam Chair. Yes, we continue to add new instructors each term. And the goal, and why part of the rationale for asking for this additional $625 or $625,000 is so that we can continue to expand the program. So as an example, we have been running physics. physics is not a hugely popular college course. It certainly is very popular, but as we get all of our physics teachers licensed in the state of Minnesota, which is our goal, concurrent enrollmently, then the goal is to expand those into additional subject areas. So we focused, Representative, we focused on the 10 most popular courses first. So as an example, we have some work to do to get to some of the more career and tech ed fields, some of them perhaps the less popular. So this allocation would help us to expand into additional subject areas.
Representative Erdahl, did you have a final follow-up? Representative Kunesh-Bean, sorry.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And then where would a teacher find this information if they were interested in participating in this program?
Mr. Kovach.
Thank you, Representative, Madam Chair. We broadly advertise, essentially, with the School Board Association, the MASA, the Association of School Administrators, and probably in particular and with this program and are probably our most effective partner in sending out the information. That is, well, probably two. One would be MASSP, the secondary school principals, who share this then with their teachers. And then also our concurrent enrollment partners. So the two or four-year colleges that grant the current concurrent enrollment, they have been wonderful partners with us. That's MNCEP and the other college partners. In our case, in our region, most of our so our college partners primarily are M-State, Fergus Falls, Southwest State out of Marshall, and Bemidji State. So those three institutions kind of share those courses. But again, this is a statewide program. We have teachers from over 250 school districts. The University of Minnesota shares this information with their teachers in the metro area, as an example.
Representative Kunesh-Bean, any follow-up? Okay, great. I have Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I like the program, and the thing is, I do appreciate the revenue neutral perspective of the fiscal note, too. I appreciate that of the author. But I do think sometimes, you know, I come from the private sector, and we pay for everything ourselves. And I'm not against helping people do that, but I do think you should have some type of a copay. You know, in government, everything doesn't have to be free and paid for by the taxpayers. But I guess I would ask the author of the bill if she would consider some type of a copay for a teacher to participate, especially in light of the fact that we're seeing a budget crunch coming up here due to COVID-19.
Representative Sanpete.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Grunhagen, I think that's a very great question, and I appreciate you bringing that forward. I think it's important for members to understand that the obligation for these additional 18 credits that were placed on teachers were completely unexpected, unforeseen, something that they may not have been, you know, it wasn't in their budget. They weren't planning to have to take the additional credits in order to teach these courses. And this, again, it really goes back to the Higher Learning Commission. The purpose of doing the bill the way I'm doing it now, and only for 3 years, is to make sure that our T's are crossed, our I's are dotted, so when we're up for review again in 2022, we can continue having these courses offered. The other thing that I think is happening by doing it just for the 3 year period is we're buying a little bit of time to start figuring out how education is going to look, you know, post-COVID. We're going to get our feet underneath us, and I think we're going to start laying the groundwork between bargaining units and school districts. I think this is something that they're ultimately going to have to start looking at rather than it being something that the state is funding. So all I'm doing right now is putting a Band-Aid on a situation for a time period, but I think that this is a situation that we're going to have to continually be reevaluating. It's a great program, without a doubt. I don't think anybody disputes that how we pay for it is going to probably become more of a conversation as the time goes on, and once we have a better idea of what our budget in the state of Minnesota looks like.
Representative Grunhagen, follow up.
Just a comment. The other, you know, I appreciate that response, Representative Sandsteed. And again, I think it's a great program too. The other thing about a copay at this particular time, it might make it available to more teachers, as it would reduce, it would stretch that $625,000 just a little bit further. My understanding was the original amount was quite a bit higher before all this COVID-19 pandemic came upon us. And so that's the other perspective. So just think about it. You don't need to respond on that. Thank you.
Sounds good.
Thank you. Just for the record, I just want to note that Representative Scott has joined us. I have Representative Bierman last on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you to the bill's author, Representative Sandsted, for bringing this forward. I've had two kids recently go through, finished college now, and it was a long road with college. And in high school, I was very much appreciative of these college and the school's courses that helped with college tuition by covering some of those credits. And I think that just on the last comments and the last conversation, I feel as a parent and as having young students, there's plenty of copays going on in both our higher education and in our public schools right now. So I appreciate the bill and I appreciate the importance of this program to our students and to families to help with the high education costs. We have a question for, I think, Ms. Lewis. I've heard a lot of the good questions on the numbers of teachers being trained, and my question goes back to two things. One, when is, again, the Higher Learning Commission instituting this rule where teachers have to be trained? Is it 2023 right now?
Ms. Lewis.
Madam Chair, Representative Bierman, I would defer to Mr. Kovach for that. I am not sure of the answer to that.
Okay.
Mr. Kovach.
Thank you, Representative Bierman, Madam Chair. 2022, however, that is when the Higher Learning Commission has stated that they will essentially enforce this kind of stipulation. However, my understanding from higher ed is that is also upon renewal of their recertification, if you will. So they kind of go through a recertification process. So a few higher ed institutions could trickle into 2023 or 2024, depending on when they renew their commitment or their kind of accreditation process, if you will, with the Higher Learning Commission. But most, I believe, are in 2022.
Representative Bierman, any follow-up?
Yes, please, Madam Chair. The next question then would be, I think I heard earlier that there's a 79% of the teachers teaching CIS need to have this these credits, and at the current rate of instruction, are we going to close the gap and fill the need?
Mr. Kovach.
Yes, I believe so. So that was 79% of school administrators had teachers that needed to teach them. So I think that was not 79% of teachers. So, and
thank
I believe so. So again, the preliminary numbers that we worked with higher ed on were 15,000 credits short. And our program to date has granted about 9,000 credits. So you should say we're 6,000 short, but unfortunately that's a moving target because teachers retire, teachers move, you know, things happen. So we do think with about three more years of $1 million a year that we should be able to, for the most part, have our teachers that care to be certified. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Kovach. Don't see any other member questions. I'm going to ask staff, did we receive any questions from the public? Seeing none, Representative Sandsteed, final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. The bill is, as I explained, I don't think anybody disagrees with the merits of the program itself. As I stated earlier, I think that this is really the compromise that probably needs to happen given the current setting in education, budget with COVID, being what it is, I think that this is a good agreement among everybody to continue moving forward to meet the needs of our students and school district, and then the accrediting requirements from the Higher Learning Commission. I appreciate the questions and I appreciate the conversation today. And with that, I would just ask for your support.
Thank you, Representative Sanpi, for bringing this bill forward. Seeing no further questions, Representative Wazlowick renews the motion that House File 3849, as amended, be re-referred to the Education Finance Division. Staff, will you unmute the microphones and take the roll?
Joachim.
Yes.
Representative Kunesh Padin.
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
Aye.
Representative Barr.
Aye.
Representative Baker.
Aye.
Representative Bennett.
Aye.
Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Representative Christensen.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Aye.
Representative Hassan.
Aye.
Representative Herr.
Aye.
Representative Jordan.
Aye.
Representative Mariani. Representative Moeller.
Aye.
Representative Sandell.
Aye.
Representative Scott.
Aye.
Representative Erdahl.
Aye.
Representative Wazlowick.
Aye.
17 ayes, 0 nays.
There being 17 ayes and 0 nays, the motion prevails, and House File 3849 is amended, is recommended to be re-referred to the Education Finance Division. So members, next on our list is House File 4098 of Representative Sandell. Representative Sandell, before we move on, I just want a reminder to always make sure to wait for me to say your name or to notice you. For the tape, it makes it a lot clearer. Otherwise, everybody's going to have to say their name before they speak. So if I'm noticing your name for the record, then folks listening to this someday when they're really bored will be able to hear who's talking. So please make sure that you go through the chair. So Representative Sandell, would you like to move your bill before the committee with the indication that would be re-referred to the Education Finance Division?
I do, Chair Joachim. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. I believe that you have an A1 amendment that goes with this bill. Would you like to explain the amendment a little bit?
I do as well. The amendment makes a minor change to the language and makes sure that 4098 has the same language as the bill presented in the Senate.
Madam Chair, Representative Sandell, do you move your A1 amendment?
I do. Thank you.
Members, staff is going to unmute the microphones, and this will be an oral vote. Members, all those that approve of the A1 amendment, say aye.
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 All those opposed, say nay. The motion passes and the A1 amendment's adopted. House File 4098 as amended is before the committee right now. Representative Sandell, why don't you go ahead and proceed?
Thank you, Chair Joachim. I've been waiting all day for a chance to talk to you and the members about 4098. This bill is a breath of fresh air. It won't tell you what you have to do, won't tell you what you can't do. Instead, it's all about what you can do. Got a good idea? Let's put it to work. Got a problem? Let's try to fix it. Got an opportunity gap? Let's go. I've got a problem with my dog. Just a second. I'm sorry. I hope this discussion will remind teachers of the best days in their classroom when they tried something a little bit different and it worked out great. The innovation research zones were put in place by legislation in 2012 and modified in 2017. We've learned lessons along the way, and 4098 is the result.
Representative Sandell, I think you just got muted somehow. We can't quite hear you. You want to check the microphone on your end?
Sure. Is that okay?
Now we can hear you. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Let's see. The idea is to create an environment of encouragement for teachers and districts to offer the ways and means for educators to plan, implement, and evaluate their own educational hypotheses.
If we do things differently, then results can improve for all of our students in any of our schools. It's an experiment looking for ways to benefit kids, helping them to match their performance to their potential. The bill establishes 12 innovation zones, 6 in Greater Minnesota, 6 in the metro area. Districts write a detailed proposal for their new work. An appointed board reviews and recommends projects to the commissioner, and plans for implementation and evaluation are put in place. It's not complicated. The bill has great support among education interest groups and in the Senate, where it was heard in committee on Wednesday. I'm pleased that the reported fiscal note will be the victim of a DE action and it should disappear. This bill encourages the initiative and ingenuity that can make places to learn more engaging, administration more nimble, and E12 education a more lively place for those who'd want to try. I have 3 distinguished testifiers with me today, and I'd ask you, Madam Chair, to call on Mrs. Brown, Haugen, or Dr. Pontrelli.
Thank you, Representative Sandow. Did you want Superintendent Brown to go first?
That would be great.
Okay. Superintendent Brown, will you state your name for the record and your title and proceed?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Joseph Brown, Sr., superintendent at Fairmont Area Schools. And I'm actually a resident of Representative Poppy's, Representative Bennett's district, and Senator Sparks. And our school district is in Representative Gunther's district and Senator Rosen. I give you those names because all those individuals in the past have been very supportive of one of the sections of this bill that I want to highlight. And that's on page 3. It's 3.15 through 3.23. That is a section of the bill that we've tried to get passed the last 4 years that would provide state funding for vocational classes that are taught outside of the regularly scheduled school day. Here's the deal. Minnesota needs to replace 200,000 skilled workers in the next 48 months. I turned 69 years old last week. If I was a bricklayer, I would have been retired already. And we need to replace 200,000 skilled workers. The average skilled worker in Minnesota makes a minimum of $60,000. That is $12 billion of income. And at 10% state income tax, that would mean that in 4 years, the state could lose $1.2 billion of state revenue in state taxes. Fairmont has, we've got a very good school board, and we have a vocational program. We have a welding academy that teaches during the school day, as well as Saturdays and in the summer. We have an agriculture academy, a culinary arts academy, a construction trades academy, and an auto academy. All the classes that we offer for students outside of regular school day, we do not generate state aid. But the deal is, with state aid, it generates $7.57 per instructional hour. And so, for example, our welding class, it costs us $10,000 to have a 60-hour welding class for 20 students. And with $7.57 of state aid per instructional hour, we generate just under $10,000. So this isn't a real moneymaker for us, but it's a moneymaker for the state of Minnesota. And so I've been a big fan of this. I do want to thank, I know that Representative Bennett's on this call, and she has been a co-sponsor of this piece of legislation for the last 4 years and has actually visited Fairmont High School. We appreciate that. And with that, I'll be glad to yield any questions, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Haugen. I think we'll save questions to the end. And next on the list, I have Dr. Pontrelli. Superintendent from Stillwater High School, please state your name for the record and your position and proceed. And members, remember, the ones that are testifying right now, like, I have their microphones turned on unless you physically turn them off. So try to remember to turn them off after you talk and back on again so we keep the audio clean. Go ahead, Dr. Pontrelli.
Stillwater Area Schools. Are you able to hear me?
Why don't you start over again? We didn't catch your name.
All right. Thank you. Denise Pontrelli, Stillwater Area Schools Superintendent. So if we've learned anything through COVID-19, it's that our teachers and students are innovative and resourceful. They've had to be. And as we witnessed, our world is changing overnight. So we have to be able to prepare students to be able to solve problems and adapt. What I'd like to talk to you a little bit today is about providing independent study and 24/7 learning for our students. Currently, our laws restrict our flexibility to meet our students' needs and wants, and they're also limiting our creativity for our students and teachers. We'd like to transform our credit and grading and course offerings so they can accurately reflect the world that our students are going to be working and living in. I'm going to share with you today just a couple of quick examples from Stillwater Schools where our students are doing amazing learning inside and outside of the classroom, but we're not necessarily able to give them credit because of the lack of ability to give independent studies. Everett Kroll wanted to learn more about creating prosthetics in order to design a low-cost alternative to the extremely expensive prosthetics that are available for growing children. He went to extreme lengths to find a mentor at 3M and began the design process. He even went on to win the International Science Fair and achieve patents, yet we weren't able to give Everett credit for his learning. Our middle school design and make students and staff helped meet the demands just this spring for the PPE for Lakeview Hospital by designing prototypes that can be printed using our 3D printers. They worked on finding out the specifications and creating prototypes for our hospital staff and are an example of some of the learning and partnership that's happening outside of our classroom walls that could be part of an independent study for students. And then finally, our one of our local business owners, Michael Manor, works along with our teachers, and they've started a project called Sustainable Stillwater. Sustainable Stillwater uses 3D technology to, it's a 3D technology prototype that measures the environmental impact of our businesses within the community. And this project that he's working on with our students certainly has the skills to be aligned with academic standards and should be given credit for our students. So when we talk about students, innovation, learning, we know that our students have lots of opportunities to learn both inside and outside of the classroom, and we think they should be encouraged to do that, and we should be able to use independent studies to award them for their work. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Pontrelli. Next we have Jay Haugen. Do you want to state your name for the record and the organization you're with and proceed?
Yes, thanks. Thanks to you, Madam Chair. My name is Jay Haugen. I testify today as one of the conveners of the Superintendent's Innovation Discussion Group, an informal group of 30 current or retired Minnesota superintendents who understand that a crucial way to improve student learning is to try new approaches to innovate. I am a recently retired superintendent from the Farmington Area Public Schools. As a group, we recognize that our current system of education was eloquently designed to get the results it is currently getting and is strongly resistant to change. And so to overcome this, you have before you a different kind of bill. Instead of the legislature providing a specific program for schools to implement within the current system, the legislature is enacting this bill to empower willing local school districts to create new educational systems that ensure equity and excellence for all by design. They're exempting them from some laws and rules that currently prevent these new models. We crafted this bill long before the pandemic, but if ever there was a time we must look to new and different ways to educate, it is now. This bill empowers schools to design 21st century learning environments for a different tomorrow and to do so in ways that are cost neutral. So just a few of the examples of things we cannot do without the bill that really are the things that you've just heard from my two colleagues is we cannot at this point have 24/7 student learning opportunities that teachers validate and award credit for that really happen outside of the classroom. And changing this would allow students to not take classes that they already have mastered. High school use of the same independent learning law should be able to use the same independent learning law that alternative schools use. And some use of extended learning revenue during the school day for students who do not participate in after-school programs and a host of other things. The superintendents in our group are anxious to use the provisions in this bill. They need the statutory exemptions to design anew. Thank you for your time and consideration.
Thank you, Mr. Haugen. I believe there are two members of the public signed up to testify. I've got Danica Leonard from Education Evolving. Why don't you state your name for the record and proceed?
Hello, good afternoon, members. Oh, I'm trying to start my video. There we go. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee.
My name is Danica Leonard, and I am the Policy Director for Education Evolving, which is a nonpartisan education organization that works to advance student-centered learning for all students and by supporting teachers who are designing and leading schools and by advocating for policy that allows for thoughtful innovations in schools across the state. At Education Evolving, we believe that policy must enable support and innovation by creating space, removing barriers, and a climate of encouragement. I'm here to testify today in support of House File 4098. This bill will codify and strengthen the previous Innovation Research Zone Law, which Education Evolving advocated for in 2017, and allow schools, districts, and charter schools greater flexibility to use research to map uncharted waters and implement innovative education methods. We also support the new language that reduces time-consuming bureaucracy by simplifying the IRZ approval process and granting exemptions concurrently with commissioner approval of innovation zone plans. This would address the frustration we heard from educators who applied for innovation zones under the 2017 law, where many exemptions they thought were left unapproved without a clear explanation. Prior to the schools moving to distance learning, we heard a lot this session about problems getting in the way of serving all students in Minnesota. And at a time where there's a lot of exasperation about not knowing how to solve these problems, it has become more apparent now than ever that we must begin to map uncharted waters. It's critical that we keep nurturing a culture of strategic innovation and exploration to probe, prototype, and pilot different strategies. This bill provides important flexibility in state leadership for innovation approaches like personalized learning, competency-based education, anytime, anywhere learning, and other pedagogies. Educators have clearly demonstrated during this pandemic that education must adapt and innovate to meet evolving needs and demographics of our students, and that the authority to innovate cannot be limited to our crisis response. We've seen schools and districts move mountains by rapidly adjusting instruction in response to the COVID-19 distance learning executive order. We've seen schools work to prevent further widening of the state's achievement gap down the line. I ask the committee to see innovation research zones as an opportunity to discover and replicate what works for Minnesota students now and in the future. Thank you, Representative Sandel, Representative Mariani, Representative Edelson, and Representative Christensen, and last but not least, Representative Kunesh Podin, for your leadership and support on this bill and your efforts toward creating policy that would benefit all students.
Thank you, Ms. Leonard. Next, I have Krista Kaput from EdAllies.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Krista Kaput, and I am the Research Director for EdAllies, an advocacy organization that works to advance educational equity and remove barriers so all Minnesota students can receive a rigorous and engaging education. And I am here to support House File 4098. EdAllies supported the 2017 Innovation Research Zone legislation, and we support this iteration because we believe that it could help improve student outcomes by creating the opportunity for teachers to provide each child with an education that is student-centered, meaning it celebrates who students are, how they learn, and where they want to go, while at the same time being rigorous and aligned to the state-adopted standards. In particular, we strongly support the provision which would ensure that the innovation zones would have to administer standards-based assessments that are aligned to the state standards and comparable across across schools and student groups, which is an important objective measure that would help inform whether the innovations are working. Around the country, school districts like Denver, Memphis, and Chicago, where I was a special education teacher, have implemented innovation zones, and they have seen promising improvements in student outcomes in reading and math. Given these findings and Minnesota's persistent and unjustifiable differences in achievement, innovation zones could be one way that we help to bridge the gap. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Kaput. Staff, are there any other people signed up to testify?
That is the list.
Thank you. Members, let's move on to member questions. I have Representative Wozlawick first.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that this is a program that's already had, already been going with some several years ago with some legislation. And I'm wondering if, I know one of the big things that people talk about with how these programs can be successful is in helping close some of those gaps. And we know in Minnesota that our gaps are huge, and it's a big concern and a big issue. And there's a lot of conversation around what we can do to close those gaps. So I'm wondering if there's any
you know, evidence from these programs so far. I know it's only been a short time if we've seen that happening. And then I guess my other question would be, I think Ms. Capet kind of answered this question, but how are we ensuring that as these programs go, that they're not kind of making those same sorts of gaps just continue on? So if, I don't know who can answer that question. I don't know who to direct that to, but if someone had some input on that, I'd like, love to hear it.
Who would like to take that one?
This is Jay Haugen. I can at least start in general to answer those.
Thank you. Go ahead, Mr. Haugen.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative, for the question. So one of the things that when it comes to the 2017 bill and really getting an idea of the impact it has had is actually answered by the reason we're back here today, you know, where we had a number of innovation zones that were named innovation zones, but the very things that they asked relief from to implement their new models were not allowed. So they were approved as an innovation zone, but the things that they needed to make them work, you know, were not approved. And so that's really what this tries to clarify. So I'm not sure that we've had anybody really be able to faithfully implement, you know, what it is that they had intended to do. And it's part of why we're anxious, you know, so anxious about getting this bill passed.
Representative Wazlow, oh, Representative Sandel, you had something to add?
Just briefly, Madam Chair, thank you. I attended a meeting that Representative Moran organized at Maxfield Elementary School in St. Paul earlier in the session, and the library was full. The principal spoke eloquently, and there were people from the community who spoke up as well. Their real enthusiasm was finding a way to provide children in that community to do their best, to make their potential and their performances match. And at the end of the session, one of the moms who was standing next to me said, you know, it's community-based answers that we really need. Now, I'm not sure that all of the innovation zones will depend on community-based answers, but at Maxfield, where the staff, the administration, and the children all approach their day's learning with curiosity and energy, can depend on a community-based enthusiasm. One of the ideas that the bill suggests is a stronger relationship between schools and parents. I'm a real advocate for that. I've taught in schools that have been tough for the children, and I've taught in schools that have been more privileged environment. And those of you who've taught school know that there's not one way that all children learn. I've had the experience to work with the Minnesota Institute for Talented Youth, the Twin City Institute, St. Paul Learning Centers, and they've been teacher-led organizations with great enthusiasm. They've been wonderful, and even over 50 years, students still come back and talk about that experience. I think this is the opportunity that Dr. Pontrelli, that Jay Haugen and Joe Brown talk about are suggesting ways to put programs in place that children will in 50 years come back and talk about and say how great they were.
Thank you. Representative Wazlowick, I'm so sorry. Did you have a follow-up?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Not really. I know I saw in the bill that there is some requirement for evaluation to kind of see that the innovation, that these zones are kind of doing the things that they set out to do. And so I won't ask about that, but I think that that's an important piece of this, is that we actually, you know, it's great that we're doing this work to allow for the innovation zone and a lot of the competency-based education, the personalized education. But I just want to make sure in doing this that we're not exacerbating those gaps and having these sorts of things continue. And so I look forward to supporting this, because I think it's really important that we see what we can do with this and see if it can have an impact on those gaps. So thanks, Representative Sandel, for bringing this forward.
Thank you. And members, I have Grunhagen, Representative Erickson, Bennett, and then Christensen. So if folks can keep their comments brief and the testifiers as well, so we can get to our other bill, that would be great. So Representative Grunhagen.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be real brief. I like certain aspects of this bill, but the summary of the fiscal costs, and I know we're a policy committee, is that in 2021 it's $2 million, 22-23 is $8 million. I mean, we're spending spending your money blindly here, and we know we're going to have a deficit next year. We have a great chance of it, at least. I just got a hard time supporting the bill. I know we're policy, but does that DE amendment address that at all? By using extended time money or something like that? The last bill, it was revenue neutral, but this one, if we're going to increase spending again, I got a hard time supporting that.
Representative Grunhagen, that's a good question. We're looking at the policy now to send to finance, but I think Representative Sandel had somewhat of an answer.
Just quickly, when I spoke with Senator Nelson about this.
Representative Sandel, we lost your microphone again.
I can't hear him.
Any luck here?
Now we can hear you.
Okay. When I spoke with Senator Nelson about the bill, we agreed that the request for an appropriation should be eliminated. And the fiscal note that was attached to the bill was a result of a misunderstanding. This morning, one of our allies, former Commissioner Bob Weedle, spoke with the fiscal analyst, and those costs have been eliminated. And so we believe that we know that this bill is presently revenue neutral.
Representative Sandel, I believe that might take care of the funding from the bigger note, but there still was a fiscal note from MDE to implement it too. So that is why we're sending it to Ed Finance still. Representative Grunhagen, did you still have a follow-up?
No, go ahead to the next person.
All right, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of comments before I would like to ask Ms. Leonard a couple of questions. Mr. Haugen was talking about the present participants in the 2017 Innovation Zone proposal. But when I read the report that was distributed to us earlier this year, it seemed to me that it was the Department of Education that was denying those innovations that those school districts wanted to pursue. So I think, you know, one important measure to refine in any proposal that deals with innovation zones is to not empower the department so greatly when they're making evaluation decisions or even decisions about okaying an idea that the district has. So that is a concern. But Madam Chair, if I may, I'd like to ask Ms. Leonard a question or two.
Go ahead, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Leonard, I'm looking at your website, you know, that Ed Evolving has designed based on the 2017 session law. And, you know, it's very explicit in noting, I think, almost everything that is included in this proposal that Representative Sandel has brought forth, because it is listed as examples of, you know, personalized learning, competency-based, and so on. So I'm just wondering why Ed Evolving is thinking that an expansion of the session law is necessary at this time, when as reading your all the information on your website, it seems to mirror the Sandel proposal.
Either Ms. Leonard or Representative Sandel?
Rep. Erickson, thank you for that question. That one, I actually would have to go back to the blog just to make sure that I have all my facts straight. But Representative Sandel, if you want to chime in on anything specific, and I can review my notes and see if there's a possible answer I can provide, a response.
Representative Sandel.
The on page 2 of the bill, there are a list of 16 different ideas that might be initiated by this under the auspices of this legislation. I think they're all positive. I think they're all are situations that can benefit districts and the classrooms in which teachers are. none of these individual suggestions needs to be codified. They are simply suggestions of how this bill might support teachers or administrators in approaching ideas and putting those ideas to work. I don't know if that's the answer that Representative Erickson is looking for. If she wants to ask the question again, I'll try to be more specific.
Representative Erickson.
Well, Madam Chair, I could not hear anything that Representative Sandel said, but I will continue with the fact that I heard you say yesterday in finance that independent study is allowed for credit. I think you mentioned that you had a family member who accomplished credits that way. So, you know, my concern is that when we're doing experimentation, and I was the initial author of innovation in 2012, and then negotiated the 2017 proposal. I think we have to keep in mind that, we don't have to have so many new laws, in that we really do have in statute presently what can be accomplished. If you read carefully the statutes, there's just a lot of leeway and flexibility. So I disagree when folks say, well, we need a new law. But keeping in mind with my initial statement about when something is considered experimental, which these innovation zones have been, it is important that we keep them in session law because that has the force of statute. But it's important that we keep them there because that way that we've got a better thumb on whether or not we want to move something into statute and codify it. So that's my caution, that we be careful when we're moving into statute after not knowing exactly what the results will be of any of these ideas that are coming forth that are already present in the 2017 legislation. And then there's a little addition in the codification that Representative Sandel wants to do. So those are my comments. And if anyone can answer because I'm incorrect, please do so.
Ms. Leonard, did you have anything you wanted to add, or Representative Sandel, or any of the other testifiers?
No, I have not, Chair Yochim, I have nothing to add. I think that the comments of the superintendents and Mr. Haugen have suggested that the work that was done in 2012 and 2017 certainly was the foundation of this bill. And we're just trying to make sure that the ideas that these educators are coming to the department with are going to be endorsed and that they won't find a closed door there, but an open door.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Rep. Sandel. And I appreciate Representative Erickson's question. I'd like to echo Rep. Sandel's sentiments. This bill is it's allowing a new and different opportunity to deepen and enhance the collaborative relationship between innovation research zones and the Department of Education with the in line with the commissioner. So I do just want to echo that as well. And I appreciate the question. Thank you, Rep. Erickson, for the question.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Representative Erickson, just a moment, please. Representative Sandel, when you answer, you need to get closer to the mic. The camera is not picking up when you're speaking. So whatever you can do to make your mic a little bit louder would be great. Go ahead, Representative Erickson.
Well, just a closing comment, members. You know, one of the probably best ideas to pursue is to have less involvement, as I mentioned earlier, of the Department of Education. We tried after the 2012 legislation to take away the application process that needed to go to the commissioner, because we believed in designing that proposal that the best decision makers are found within our school districts. And this combination between school districts, charter schools, and post-secondary institutions, as well as career and technical, those are best made within the joint powers. I mean, they don't have to do a joint powers agreement, but jointly agreeing. And so I hope in the future that we can move away from all of this application process to the commissioner and put faith in our districts, charters, et cetera, to move forward with ideas that come up in our districts so that they can provide a high quality education that fits the needs of the 21st century. Thank you.
Representative Bennett, you're next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And first of all, I just want to tell Representative Sandell that in his opening statement, he did a great job working around all those distractions. I was impressed with his presentation amidst trying to handle his dog and everything. And we don't mind the dog in the background either. But anyway, I'll get to my question. I'm sorry. I want to focus in a little bit more on the portion of this bill that would address Superintendent Brown's issues, and one that I've been trying to get passed for a number of years now, along with some other colleagues, on the getting these classes like welding and things that the Fairmont schools are offering, getting those funded. I think it's so important to, for the trades, especially as he mentioned. But I do have a concern about this, and I'm going to ask a little bit of a finance related question, but it has to do with the policy that's in here. What my concern is, and I think this might be a question for Mr. Strom, but here's my question. If we remove the funding component and make this a cost neutral bill, then Mr. Strom, would that not delete the extended time provision that is in this bill that would fund the things we're trying to get at with Superintendent Brown? Because extended time, I believe, would have increased costs involved. So I'm a little confused about that and wondering if that would delete this policy portion out of this bill. I hope I made sense in what I asked.
Mr. Strom.
Madam Chair, Representative Bennett, I think the issue is one of whether there'd be more extended time activities or whether the existing amount of extended time activities would be conducted in a different way. So if the policy change still leads MDE to conclude in a fiscal note that there would be more extended time revenue being used, then there still would be a cost. If, on the other hand, the change is interpreted to say that extended time revenue would occur, but now it can happen in a different way, then there shouldn't be a fiscal cost. I'm not sure if that's getting at your question or not.
Representative Bennett.
Madam Chair, thank you. And thank you, Mr. Strom, that does. And so from my background in working with this bill, I found that the extended time would be increased because it did. I would get fiscal notes back when Superintendent Brown and I would attempt to work on this. So that does concern me on two counts. One is I really want to see Superintendent Brown's component put in somehow, but at the same time, I can't see increasing funding right now for anything, even things I really want, like the component that we're talking about here, simply because we know we don't have any money and we're going to have a huge deficit next year. And I think we need to be fiscally responsible. But that'll be good discussions for our Finance Committee meeting on Monday.
Thank you, Representative Bennett. I have Representative Christensen last, and then we're going to move on. Representative Christensen.
Okay, I'll be very brief. I just want to say thank you to Representative, Madam Chair, thank you. Thank you to Representative Sandell, and thank you to the testifiers. I'm excited about some changes that I hope will be happening in education and innovative ideas like this. So I do support the bill. And I just want to thank everyone who I know has put in a lot of time here. So thanks so much.
Thank you, Representative Christensen. Representative Sandell, final word. Or actually, first, staff, did we get any public questions or comments? Seeing none, Representative Sandell, final word.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the conversation, the discussion, the questions, and even the skepticism. The experience that Mr. Haugen, Ms. Pontrelli, and Mr. Brown bring to this, I think, is really valuable. I appreciate their conversations. And the experience of the other teachers in this committee, I think, suggests that we can move forward. We can encourage good ideas. We can approach this opportunity and achievement gap. And I'm excited about the opportunities this bill offers. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Sandell. Members? Let's see here. Should we have Representative Sandel, would you like to renew your motion that House File 4098 be, as amended, be re-referred to the Education Finance Division?
Thank you, Chair, I would.
With that, seeing no further questions, and Representative Sandel has renewed his motion, Clerk, will you unmute folks and take the roll?
Chair Youakim?
Aye.
Representative Kunesh Padin?
Aye.
Representative Erickson?
No.
Representative Barr?
No.
Representative Bennett?
Aye.
Representative Bierman?
Aye.
Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot. Representative Baker?
No.
Representative Christensen? Representative Grunhagen?
No.
Representative Hassan?
Yes.
Representative Kerr?
Yes.
Representative Jordan?
Yes.
Representative Mariani? Representative Moeller?
Yes.
Representative Sandel?
Yes.
Representative Scott?
No.
Representative Erdahl?
Yes.
Representative Wasilewicz?
Yes.
Representative Christensen?
Yes.
Twelve ayes, 5 nays.
Members, with 12 ayes and 5 nays, the motion prevails and the House File 4098 is amended, is recommended to be re-referred to the Education Finance Division. Members, whoever has 5 o'clock news on, we can hear you in the background. Remember, when we're taking the roll and everybody's unmuted, folks need to physically mute their own buttons too. It'd be really helpful to keep the audio clear. With that, I am going to hand over the virtual gavel here to Representative Kunesh Padin to chair while I walk through our education policy bill.
Thank you, Representative Youakim. Members, today we are walking through the committee policy bill, which will move as House File 163. First, Representative Youakim and House Research will walk through the bill, and then we will take public testimony. And we will conclude with member questions. As a reminder, no votes will be taken today. We will be holding a meeting next week to take up amendments and to vote on the final bill. So Representative Youakim, would you like to move your bill before the committee for discussion?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, I would like to move House File 163 before the committee for discussion.
And would you like it to be recommended to the General Register?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Youakim. I believe you also have a DE3 amendment. Would you like to move your amendment before the committee for discussion?
Yes, Madam Chair. I'd like to move the DE3 amendment before the committee for discussion.
Wonderful. Okay. Would you please proceed with your presentation?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, like we said before, the DE3 amendment that's before the committee for discussion is going to be our policy bill. My intention is to walk through today, take testimony, and have member questions, lay the bill on the table, and we'll take it up again next week on Wednesday during our regular committee time for amendments. And then move on from there. So, Madam Chair and members, before you is a very slimmed down version of an education policy bill. It's my hope for our committee. It was my hope for our committee to accomplish much more this session. But a pandemic changed that in the blink of an eye, a pandemic that has shown a harsh light on the opportunity gap in our schools, and I fear has exasperated them. Next year, we will have to have a laser focus on policies that will help our students who will be facing increased challenges and may have fallen even further behind. So my plea right now is for you to get your thinking caps on and work over the interim so that we can really hit the ground running. Our kids really deserve no less than that. I would like to thank the committee for all the work we did before pandemic time in our last hearing on March 11th. Because of that work, we were able to get to this point now. And House File 163 is my attempt to find the bills that had general agreement among stakeholders, will grant schools some needed flexibility and will assist our students, teachers, school nurses, and administrators when they do get back to school in the fall. This bill is a very reasonable policy bill, and none of these provisions have any money attached. We've heard all these provisions in this bill at least once, some twice, some even three times before our committee. So I'll just walk through the bill quickly. We also have Doe Shuni here from MDE to answer any questions members might have on their provisions of the bill. And I know that we have a few testifiers lined up as well. So here we go. Let's start. Article 1 is the general education article. Sections 1 and 2 are from the MDE DE2 that we heard in committee on Tuesday. The language was also included in the Teacher of Color and American Indian bill that we heard earlier in session and passed to the House floor. These provisions modify the World's Best Workforce and the Achievement Integration Program to encourage the creation of school environments that are culturally responsive, inclusive, and respectful learning and work environments for our students, staff, families, and communities. Section 3 was also from MDE's bill. It allows tribal contract school board members to participate in Minnesota School Boards Association trainings for newly elected school board members. Section 4, also an MDE provision, requires school boards to evaluate principals on their cultural responsiveness during their evaluation cycle. This provision does not take effect until July 1st, 2022. Section 5 is Representative Sandel's bill, House File 3179. This one we heard way early in the session that puts back in place language allowing for school district transportation contracts to be exempted from the general requirement for school districts' contract terms, as they were before the nutrition contracts were added and a cross-reference was missed and they were boxed out. So Section 3 is another MDE provision that requires the school board to formally develop and implement a long-term plan around cultural responsiveness. It mirrors a lot of the language that we heard when we heard the Reimagine report in front of committee earlier in session. Feels like a lifetime ago. Section 7 is another MDE policy bill and requires charter schools to comply with uniform municipal contracting law. Section 8 is Representative Freiberg's bill, House File 2963. It allows school boards to deliver notice of the school referendum and proposed revenue increase to taxpayers up to 45 days prior to the day of the referendum. The current maximum notice right now is 30 days. Extending it to 45 days will allow school districts to get the notice out in time for the beginning of the no excuse absentee voting, which starts 45 days before the election. Sections 9 and 10 are Representative Sanstead's bill, House File 2383. This bill made minor changes to the role of school land trust directors. We heard it last Tuesday. It includes clarifying that the director is required to submit legislative recommendations when submitting the annual budget and time for review to the Permanent School Trust Commission, changing from shall to may to provide more flexibility, and removing the cap on the number of staff positions and the requirement those positions be in the unclassified service. Next, we have Article 2, which is the Education Excellence section. Section 1 is another MDE provision regarding transmitted records moving to other school districts. You'll note that we have removed some language that had included pupil withdrawal agreements. That was at the request of the school administrators. Section 2 is from MDE's policy bill and requires the Commissioner of Education to consult with the Tribal Nations Education Committee when revising academic standards. Section 3 is Representative Edelson's bill, House File 3852. It clarifies reporting requirements on districts' efforts to screen and identify students with the characteristics of dyslexia. This bill was a product of a working group that met over December and the stakeholders. Sections 4 through 6 are MDE provisions regarding pupil withdrawal agreements. It defines those agreements and requires schools to report them to the Department of Education. Section 7 is also from MDE's policy bill and allows students to wear eagle feathers and other tribal regalia at graduation. Then we're on to Article 3, which is the policies that pertain to teachers. Section 1 is also from MDE and the Teacher of Color and American Indian bill. It puts into statute the goals around increasing the teachers of color and American Indian teachers in our classrooms. Sections 2 through 4 is Representative Mueller's bill. Mueller's bill, House File 4251, it requires all licensed teachers, regardless of license tier, to receive mental illness training, including at least 1 hour of suicide prevention best practice training during license renewal. This training is currently required only for tier 3 and 4 licensed teachers. This language has a few changes from when it left our committee. It removes the rulemaking and changes the effective date to June 30th, 2021. The reason why we're moving the effective date is right now testing centers for things like this still and training centers aren't open yet. So we didn't want to put something in statute that would prohibit a teacher from getting licensed or renewed this year. Sections 5 and 6 are two NDE provisions that require school boards to evaluate teachers on their cultural responsiveness during their evaluation cycle. These provisions are not effective until July 1st, 2022. Then we have Article 4, which pertains to special education. Section 1 is Representative Torkelson's bill, House Bill 853. This bill allows the school district to conduct functional behavioral assessments as standalone evaluations without conducting a comprehensive evaluation of the students. We had this up last year and it was in our policy bill. Section 2 is Representative Hewitt's bill, House File 1940, another provision we had in our policy bill last year. It allows students with an IEP to participate in programs provided via ADSIS in service areas not designated as educational needs resulting from the student's disability in their IEP. This only applies in situations where the participation would not increase cost for the program or displace a student from services who is not currently classified as a student with disabilities. And then we're going on to Article 5, which is our health and safety article. And it has sections 1 and 2 that are Representative Hewitt's bill. That's House File 575, also from our bill last year. This bill was included in our final, like I said, final policy bill and unfortunately did not make it through conference. It helps districts, particularly our school nurses, dispose of unclaimed drugs or medication left behind by parents for their students. Article 6 is our nutrition article and is comprised of Representative Juergen's bill, House File 55. It is a provision that has been had a very long, hard journey, but has come to a resolution. It requires districts to develop and post on their website school meals policy that describes what happens when a student does not bring money to pay for their meal. The policy is required to be reasonable and well-defined and must prohibit lunch shaming or other means of ostracizing the student. It will also lay out how overdue money is to be collected and requires that those conversations be only between a school and a parent or guardian. Article 7, the final article, contains housekeeping provisions from the Department of Education. We have Section 1, which aligns statute with federal guidance, stating that a school district cannot require a birth certificate to enroll in a public school. Section 2 eliminates obsolete language under compulsory instruction that waives annual testing requirements if instructors in unaccredited schools have passed a teacher competency test. Section 3 updates language around Minnesota's Early Learning Foundation Scholarship Program pilot sites. Section 4 makes clarification changes to the American Indian Education Act of 1988. Sections 5 and 6 make clarifying changes to the American Indian Parent Advisory Boards. Section 7 and 8 make clarifying changes to the American Indian Act of 1988 again. Section 9 updates an incorrect reference in the Achievement and Integration Aid. Section 10 clarifies statutes requiring charter schools to follow the English Language Learners Act. Section 11 prohibits charter schools from using corporal punishment. Section 12 and 13 clarifies that an authorizer withdraws before the end of the five-year evaluation. They are not subject to the evaluation. Section 14 clarifies that enrollment in a charter school is free to any student in Minnesota. Section 15 clarifies that only one local education agency charter school may organize an affiliated nonprofit building corporation. Section 16 updates a reference in a statute due to an organizational name change. Section 17 removes NDE from the list of agencies that receive expungements because they no longer need to receive this after the creation of PELSI. And finally, Section 18 is a technical recodification of revisers' instructions from House File 3455 that we sent to the floor earlier this session. So members, I understand I would like to thank nonpartisan staff for helping put this bill together. They are doing an amazing job with the volume of work we are throwing at them right now, all while having to do their jobs under incredibly strange circumstances. So I just want to thank nonpartisan staff. And Madam Chair, I believe we can go on to testifiers and then I will stand for questions.
All right. Well, thank you, Representative Yalakim. As you went through, I was renewing my knowledge of it, and it's an impressive bill you put together. So First, we will pause for clarifying questions from members, and then we're going to go on to public testimony. We have a number of the public signed up to testify today. So first is our commissioner of the Department of Education. I don't know if Commissioner Ricker is available.
I am, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Welcome to the committee. If you would identify yourself and then go ahead with what you've got to share.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. This is Mary Catherine Ricker, Commissioner at the Minnesota Department of Education. I again appreciate the opportunity to provide my thoughts on legislation before this committee. And I do want to thank Chair Iwakim for including nearly all of the provisions from the department that the committee heard earlier this week. Since I spoke to the department's proposals in detail on Tuesday, I'll just briefly say that inclusion of the provisions around cultural responsiveness, improvements to American Indian education, and pupil withdrawal agreements are important steps to addressing inequities that will continue to persist in our education system until we work on them together. And I also applaud the chair for continuing to include robust and consensus language on providing our students healthy and nutritious meals in a respectful manner. As I said on Tuesday, punishing students for adult issues is not acceptable. There is one omission that I find disappointing, and that is providing access to education data to tribal nations. Under the federal Every Student Succeeds Act, districts and charters are expected to engage in much deeper and meaningful tribal consultation than ever before. This includes interactions and information sharing with tribal nations that allows them to meaningfully and substantially contribute to the district or charter school's title program plan for the education of American Indian students. Federal guidance has stated that many consultation areas necessitate access to student educational data by tribal nations. Without the explicit addition of tribal nations to the Chapter 13 list on educational data, a list I need to add that already contains 17 other activities or entities, districts sometimes refuse to share this data. This prevents tribal nations from improving school plans, helping American Indian students in areas like concurrent enrollment, achievement in all academic areas, extracurricular programs, discipline issues, engagement, and many other programmatic areas. We should not deny our students these additional supports. Given that addition to this list would still make it voluntary for districts and charter schools to share data, it only makes sense to add our tribal nations to the Chapter 13 list. But Madam Chair, I would again like to thank you and the committee for all your work during these unprecedented times and including so many strong provisions in your bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Commissioner Ricker. I don't know if you can stick around and see if we have any questions down the road, but next we have Brad Lundell with the Minnesota Administrators for Special Education, Minnesota School Psychologist Association, and on behalf of education management organizations. Mr. Lundell, would you please join us, state your name and the organization for the record, and proceed.
My name is Brad Lundell, and I'm here today on behalf of all the folks that you just mentioned, Minnesota Administrators of Special Education, Minnesota School Psychology Association, and also talking on behalf for the Minnesota Association of School Administrators, the Minnesota School Business Officials, Minnesota School Board Association, the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, Minnesota Rural Education Association, and Schools for Equity in Education. There's three items that we have our strong support for. The one is Article 1, Section 8, which is the change in notification for the referendum. That was authored by Representative Freiberg. And then also in Article 4, Sections 1 and 2, Section 1, the Torkelson or New Ulm work. And I want to especially thank the folks from New Ulm for working on that 2 years ago now and coming up with all those provisions. And again, thank you for the House for including that, having the functional behavior assessment as a standalone as opposed to being part of a comprehensive assessment. Also, Section 2, which was carried by Representative Hewitt, which is the ADSIS bill, which was allowed students that have an IEP in a non-related area to receive tutoring services through the ADSIS program. So again, I want to thank the committee for allowing me to testify today and be on behalf of all the education organizations that are supporting those provisions. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Lundell. Next, we have Paul Spies. If you would again state your name and the organization you are with for the record, and then you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. My name is Paul Spies with the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota. I'd like to thank Chair Kunesh Badin and Chair Joachim for the inclusion of these provisions from the Increased Teacher of Color Act that Chair Joachim had mentioned are in the bill. And I'd like to say that the issues that came up earlier this week, I have some comments for. First of all, Representative Erdahl had asked about meeting with Representative Marquardt, and we had done that in 2019, and he gave his blessing to those amendments in the World's Best Workforce. I agree with Representative Erickson and Grunhagen's comments Wednesday about we need to educate the best of our ability, and Representative Grunhagen saying that we need to improve reading and math scores, and these provisions would do that, namely the World's Best Workforce, Achievement and Integration, the State Goal and Report. We have 9 Republicans who have signed on to the bill, 6 in the House, 3 in the Senate. And we look forward to continuing support as we go along the process. Finally, with Representative Sandel asking about the state goal of 2% per year being rather ambitious, we have a state higher ed attainment goal that says that 70% of all 25 to 44-year-olds should have a higher education by 2025. And we've increased that from 2015 when it was passed, from 57% who have higher ed degrees to 62%. We right now only have 4% teachers of color, and in order to meet the 2016 expectation that the legislature set, that all students should have equitable access to effective and diverse teachers who reflect their diversity, with 34% students of color currently, it would take us 30 years to achieve equity if our student population can get more diverse. So a 2% annual increase is rather bold, but also doable. Thank you, committee, for your attention to this matter and for all your leadership.
Well, thank you all, Commissioner Ricker, Mr. Lundell, and Mr. Spies. That concludes that part of our committee meeting right now. Staff, have there been any questions or comments submitted by the public?
Madam Chair, no, there have been no further comments from the public.
Wonderful. Okay, so that then concludes our list of signed up testifiers. Members, we're going to now move to questions and discussion. If you have a question, please raise your hand or contact the staff to request your recognition. First on the list, I have Representative Erdahl. Would you like to state your question, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is Commissioner Ricker still on board?
Yes, sir, I am.
Okay. I have a question for Commissioner Ricker. Talking about the data with Indian children, Indian students from the school districts. Could you be a little more specific on what type of data you're looking for in that? I know that that's not in the bill, but I think a legitimate question.
Mm-hmm.
Commissioner, please.
Madam Chair,
Representative, thank you so much for the question. It would not be data I would be looking for, or the department would be looking for. It would be data that a district or charter school and the Tribal Nations Education Committee would agree to under consultation. So it could be very specific to a school community. And in some cases, it might be attendance data, if that's an area they are targeting for collaboration to improve. It could be academic data, if that's the agreement they have for their collaboration to improve, that they would work based on what they feel would be their mutual priorities in a school community in their formal consultation process.
Okay, thank you.
Follow up, Representative Erdahl?
I think she answered the question. I could expound a little bit, but I'll save that for a later time. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Next on our list is Representative Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I didn't know I figured I was down on the list somewhere, but I have had some back and forth with Adosh regarding this data piece, and I didn't know whether to bring it up now because I've just now gotten an answer for him. So I don't know if you would like me to save that for next week or if you would like me to kind of expound on that student data piece right now.
I think it would help if we had some clarification on that. So if you would like to be brief and concise, that would be great, Representative sure. Scott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I was just in the middle of sending an email to him because I consulted with House Research, Mr. Ben Johnson up there, and he looked over the federal and the state laws regarding student data and tribal student data. And his conclusion was that there's nothing in either state or federal law that would allow the sharing of a student's individual identifiable information to the tribes without parental consent. So that's his finding after looking at the federal and state laws. And Mr. Uni had sent me over some documentation about what laws he was referring to federally and so forth. And so from House Research's assessment, parental consent would be needed by either parent or guardian consent would be needed before that information could be shared.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Representative Erdahl, did you have a response to that? No? Okay. It looked like you were reaching for your mute button. I'm sorry, but it was your glasses. All right. Anything else to add to that, Representative Scott?
No, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you. All right. Next, we will go to Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is for Brad Lundell.
Mr. Lundell, are you there still?
Yes, I'm here.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Lundell, are you concerned at all about the new mandates that'll have local impact in this proposal? You know, have you heard from school districts, et cetera?
Mr. Lundell.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, I have not heard personally from any school districts regarding provisions of the bill at this juncture. I will have them look again.
Madam Chair. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Mr. Lundell, the world's best workforce, you know, is going to be very much amended or modified. The principals and also teacher evaluation. And those are all going to have local impacts from my perspective. So I would hope that we could have some serious discussion as this bill moves along as to how this is going to affect local districts. Because as you know, our finances will probably be in jeopardy in this coming year or biennium, I should say. And so I think, you know, we should be very thoughtful about moving forward with some of these differences in the world's best workforce
in teacher evaluation and for our principals in their evaluating. Thank you.
Yeah, Madam Chair, just in response to Representative Erickson, we can convene again at the management group. We've been meeting several times a week, and I will bring up those points. There, many of those folks are probably listening in right now, so we can probably discuss those prior to the bill being in committee.
Madam Chair, quick addition.
Yes, Madam Representative Yelakim.
Thank you, Madam Chair. At least to the points of the evaluation of the principals and teachers, that section does not take effect until July 2022. So I think there's some time for folks to get that, and that's actually a local control issue. It's the school boards that can decide that. So just wanted to remind that. I think I will defer to Commissioner Ricker and Commissioner Ricker on anything else, and maybe some follow-up on Representative Scott's question.
Thank you, Representative. Commissioner, are you there, and would you like to respond to those two issues?
Yes, I'm here, Madam Chair. Thank you so much. Madam Chair and Representative Scott, at first I would like to say thank you to Representative Scott for asking for some clarifications and for working with my staff on this question. I really appreciate her thoughtful questions, and I appreciate the time she spent working on this issue. And I do appreciate that that Representative Scott's point is one of the reasons why we would need to give authority to share so that the Tribal Nations Education Committee and the district or charter school could work out their access issues. And I do know Mr. Uni is with us as well today, so can talk about some more of the details of the bill.
Thank you, Commissioner Richter. Mr. Uni, are you there? Would you like to respond?
Hi, Madam Chair, committee members, thank you. Adosh Uni, Government Relations for the Department of Education. Yes, I would echo Commissioner Ricker's points about the need for the authority. I was able to connect with Representative Scott over the past day and talk through some of the concerns there that were echoed in the committee hearing back in March. We had some conversations, I know it sounds like years ago, but this issue was discussed a little bit. I worked with the Director of Indian Education at the Department of Education to put together some information around what the expectation is around consultation under the Every Student Succeeds Act in terms of more meaningful consultation. And the guidance for under federal law, and it is guidance, does say that a way to achieve that more meaningful consultation is through data sharing. And the commissioner mentioned some of the areas where educational data would be required to help tribes provide that input on student, on district and charter plans around improving American Indian education. She mentioned areas like improvement of academic achievement in all areas, varied approaches to education in the elementary, middle school, and secondary settings, extracurriculars even is an area where tribes could be involved, as that's a crucial component of engagement with the school community. And so, you know, the concern that Representative Scott shared around parental input or parental opt-in, well, yes, that is, to echo what the commissioner said, that is the one of the reasons why we would want to have explicit authority for the district and charter to share. Again, this is a list that already has 17 activities or entities on it that are allowable for districts to districts and charter schools to share their data, educational data, with other entities for legitimate educational purposes. So this would not be creating a different type of right that no one else has. This would be adding to the list to comply with federal consultation expectations. And again, as mentioned, this would be voluntary for the district and charter. On how they would do this, they would obviously have to sign off on the way in which they would, in the way they would share this data with tribes.
Thank you, Mr. Uni. I do believe Representative Scott, would you like to respond, or do you have a different question?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I would just respectfully disagree with Mr. Uni's assessment
based on what feedback I got from House Research. But we can certainly take this conversation offline, but there's no authority in either federal or state law to share this information without parental or guardian consent. And you have to identify the specific data sets in this bill that you would want to have shared between the districts and the tribes. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Scott. Any follow-up on that, Mr. Uni, or is this something that you'd like to take up on?
No, Madam Chair, I appreciate Representative Scott's invitation to work offline. I'm more than happy to work with department staff to see if we can hash out some type of agreement or come to some type of mutual understanding around the expectations. I appreciate that. Thank you.
So, Mr. Uni, I do have a question. Without this permission, what is it that is not being done or is incapable of being done?
Madam Chair, thank you for the question. So in conversations with our Indian Education Director, she, with her interactions with the tribal nations, particularly through the Tribal Nations Education Committee that represents the tribes on education matters around the state, she's heard from them that there are districts, through the advice of their attorneys, that the tribal nations are not listed in that list, that they cannot share data with the tribal nations. And that's preventing the tribal nations, in their opinion, and through their understanding of federal guidance, which matches federal law, they are unable to fully support their students through the lens of full and meaningful consultation that the Every Student Succeed Act sets out. So they believe that their efforts to meet the call of the federal law to support all student groups, and for them, their charge, specific charge, is American Indian students that are tribally enrolled in their respective tribes, because they need that data to help inform them on how they can give input into the school plans of how to educate their children. And so with access to this data, they believe that that would make them more effective partners in the achievement levels of American Indian students.
And would they be able to access this information without the parent or guardian permission?
Since they are not on the Madam Chair, on the list, my understanding, you know, and because we are pursuing it, our understanding is that would allow them to. And districts, because the tribal nations are not on this list in Chapter 13, the districts do have reasonable legal ground on which to stand to deny access to the data. In terms of parental guidance, parental opt-in or parental permission, I believe that would allow access to that data. But then the tribes with individual parental opt-in, and I know the legislature's had conversations in the past few years about moving to a parental opt-in model for educational data. And I think one of the challenges we see there is that we don't have full participation. So therefore schools, just for any type of activity for improving education, without the full data set, which we know have full protections under state and federal education data laws, without those full data sets, they wouldn't be able to effectively and accurately implement educational plans tailored to their specific groups of students. And so we'd see that same problem shift to the tribal nations' ability to provide effective and active and dynamic input for improving the situations of the student groups, their American Indian students that they're trying to help.
All right, thank you. Thank you for that explanation. Are there anyone, Representative Scott?
I didn't think I had my hand raised. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Thank you. That might be an old request. Paul Spies has something to add. Would you like to go ahead?
I just wanted to add a follow-up to Representative Erickson's question about district support for the World's Best Workforce Amendments. School Board Association, Association of School Administrators, Principals Association, AMSD, Ed Minnesota, Pelsby, all endorsed the Increased Teacher of Color Act, which included these proposed World's Best Workforce amendments.
Thank you, Mr. Spees. Well, seeing nobody else on the list looking to respond, I think we will move to closing remarks. There's no more requests for recognition, so Representative Joachim, I will now pass the virtual gavel back to you for your
actually, Madam Chair, do you want to ask staff if there was anybody from the public that comments?
Thank you. Is there any public any questions or comments submitted by the public?
Madam Chair, I have got no questions.
All right. Well, then we will move along, and Representative Joachim, I will now pass the virtual gavel back to you for your closing thoughts and announcements.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for your patience, members, being mindful of the time and that we will actually be finalizing this bill on Wednesday. I'll forego comments on the final comments on the bill. And just remember, next Wednesday, we anticipate our meeting taking place on May 5th, Wednesday, May 5th at 2:30 p.m. during our regular committee time on Zoom. During that meeting, we'll be discussing any amendments to the education policy bill and taking a vote. Members, could you, will have to have their amendments submitted by Tuesday, May 4th at 2:30 p.m. Once again, those amendments have to be submitted by Tuesday, May 4th at 2:30 p.m. So are there any questions about the process so far? Seeing none, members, thank you. Oh, sorry. I'm getting a note typed to me real quick. Sorry, I actually said the wrong date. So it's Tuesday, May 5th at 2:30 p.m. So Tuesday, May 5th at 2:30 p.m. is when amendments have to be submitted to our committee administrator. So Tuesday, May 5th, 2:30 p.m. So members, are not seeing any other questions. I will, with that, we will all get outside and enjoy the weather tonight, and the meeting is adjourned.